Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Healing the Parent Wound podcast. I'm so excited to get started again with a podcast in 2024, and my first guest of 2024 is Megan of Megan P Coaching, and I found her on TikTok. So if you guys are on TikTok, go find her, Megan P Coaching on TikTok. Yeah. And she's a life coach, and she kind of specializes in estrangement, adult children estrangement.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she's got some really great content. And I really liked her content. And there was one video that particularly stood out. So I think this is really going to be a good conversation. So let's get started. And Megan, please share any other websites or social media. I'll let you introduce yourself and share whatever you want for our audience and listeners.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I didn't realize I was your first guest, so that's pretty exciting. Yeah. I do have my own website. It's meganprather.com, pretty easy to find. You can keep up with me there. You can sign up for my newsletter. I also have a private Facebook group where you can go, and all of that's linked on my website. So you can find all that there. And then I am working on launching a support group right now with a partner with an LPC, Rebecca St. Clair, with Living Truth Counseling. We're really excited for this. This is a women's only group right now for 18 and over. And we just get together and socialize, and it's just been really, really fun. So if you're interested in that, you can find that information on my website as well.
Great. Wonderful. That sounds really exciting.
Yeah.
So one of the video that really stood out to me that I reached out to you about was this, this kind of thing that I think a lot of us did or do is really centering our parents, and that's normal. It's understandable. And I see this in, it's what I did. I see this in, a lot of my clients when they first come in, of really, I call it pedestalizing kind of, but I really like that term that you use, centering. So can you talk more about what that meant for you and what that was like in your journey?
Yeah. So it was kind of a hard realization to come to be honest with you, that I had placed my parents on this pedestal that I didn't know really existed until I really started looking at why I was a people pleaser and why I put everyone ahead of myself. And so when I first got myself into therapy and started being asked those questions about what I want, what I need, and I had no answer, it almost always went back to my parents. Well, I can't do what I really want to do because it might hurt my mom. And I had to get really honest with myself of, why do I feel that way about them? It's almost like they can do no wrong, even though there was a lot of things wrong that were happening. So it was very tough to realize that I had put them in the center of my life above myself, above my children, above my husband, above my friends, above everything. It was like everything revolved around my parents. So it was really hard to realize that I had to make some changes if I wanted to have a different life. I kind of for a while was like, no, everything is fine. I can handle it all. And you really can't.
Absolutely. Yeah. Such a tough realization. And then it's like, you start to become aware of that. How did you go from, pedestalizing and centering them to kind of beginning to pull back from that? Especially with enmeshment, right? The more enmeshed families, it's really, really tough.
It is very tough. I didn't realize the level of enmeshment that we had for quite a long time. My brother and I have a very difficult relationship. Him and I have been butting heads since like 2016. I'm not sure exactly what changed with him and I, because we were very close. And then we just started seeing the world vastly differently with our political beliefs and religious beliefs. And so I was really struggling with him not feeling about me the way that I felt about him. And we had these really difficult, a couple of years where there was a lot of kind of drama between him and I. And he straight up told me one time, you're a hypocrite, you need help, you're kind of the cause of all the problems in the family. And I took him seriously and I went and got myself therapy. I was also dealing with some digestive problems that I was told were from anxiety, and 100% was like, I don't have anxiety. I'm perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with me anxiety wise. Like, this has to be physical. So I had doctors coming at me and my brother coming at me. So I went to therapy and started being told, you don't have very good boundaries. You don't have very good communication. And I think this is modeled throughout your family. And so I had to get really curious with myself of, why don't I have boundaries? Why don't I know what it is that I want? That's when it became obvious to me that I think about my mom a lot more than I thought about myself. But it still took me probably 6 months before I could really set boundaries with her. I thought for a little while, I could handle it all. I can change my communication. I can change my boundaries, and I don't have to have difficult conversations. I'm not going to have to change the way my family dynamic is. I just have to change myself. Yeah. That's when the enmeshment became very apparent, because I couldn't have a conversation with my mom that my brother didn't find out, that my dad didn't find out, and then my aunts and uncles. And it was kind of like, felt like there was this secret web of things happening that I wasn't always privy to. So that's when I started learning about enmeshment. And that was kind of difficult to understand, that I'm not just fighting a battle with myself. I'm also fighting a battle with every person in my family. It's like, it's just all connected and all very difficult to unravel. And then I started realizing that I was unhappy in my marriage, that the same dynamic that was playing out with my parents, all those communication problems and boundary problems were existing within my marriage and within my relationship to my children. So I made some very difficult decisions with my husband and asked him to move out. And at that point, the enmeshment kind of came up again. And my dad kind of did some things where he called my husband behind my back and said some kind of awful things like, your marriage is fine. I don't know what's wrong with Megan. I don't know why she wants to change everything. You didn't do any wrong. And my husband took responsibility and said, no, these problems have existed, whether she's told you or not. Because I was so ashamed. My parents don't believe in divorce. And I knew that they're very religious. So I was so ashamed. Like, I can't admit this to myself that I have a problem in my marriage, let alone admit it to the outside world. But I finally did. It took a lot of work and I finally did. And when I realized my dad didn't care about me, he didn't call me to check on me. He called my husband, hurt so much. And that was kind of the aha moment that I realized, and through help with my therapist, do I want to work on a relationship with my parents, or do I want to work on my marriage and my relationship with my kids? And I made that decision and went down that path. And it only took about 2 weeks of not answering my mom's calls before my dad got involved. Then my brother got involved, and then everybody kind of stopped talking to me and me talking to them. And everybody was like deleting each other off social media, and it got really ugly and really messy. But all I could do was focus on myself and on my marriage. And that's kind of been the place that I've been in for about the last year and a half, coming up on 2 years. In June, it'll be 2 years for me. So I've just been really focusing on myself, and things with my marriage have gotten better, and things with my kids have gotten better, but not so much with my family. Things have gotten much, much worse with them, actually.
So coming up on 2 years of no contact.
Yeah.
And did they, because I know those kind of enmeshed grippy parents tend to, you know, when you pull back from all of that, they can get worse, right? Because that's their dysregulation and trauma. They get really super activated.
That happened for a little while. I blocked them off of like all social media and off of my phone. And so then they started contacting my children. And they even like showed up to my house for Christmas with gifts for my kids and things like that. They were still coming to like my kids, like they're in band and they had a band contest or concert, and my parents came, but they didn't sit by me. They wouldn't make eye contact with me. They sat on the other side. And before the concert was even over, they like bolted out of there, didn't say hi to either of my children, just were behaving very differently than they typically would. And it was just really very difficult to watch them kind of cling on to my children and kind of use my children to either get at me or, you know, get at my children. I don't know. It was very hard to understand, but my kids are older. My oldest son was 17 at the time, and his feelings were hurt by their behavior. And so he wrote them a letter explaining why he was upset, because he's in his own therapy. He's doing his own therapy journey. And so with the help of his therapist, he wrote a letter, and my parents blatantly ignored it. They have not responded to it in all this time. They'll still send him text messages and act like he never sent this letter. They'll send him birthday cards and not say anything in there. So it's really, that was the hardest part for me, was watching my kids get hurt.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now are your children also no contact with them?
My youngest son is sort of like the forgotten child. He was never really pulled in as drastically as my oldest was. Yeah. So I think he probably doesn't consider himself no contact or low contact. He's kind of just like, whatever, you know, they'll still send him text messages here and there, and he doesn't seem to be fazed by it. My oldest son, I definitely think he considers himself no contact. He tried to address some things with them outside of me, but I don't think that they can see that. I think they think in the mastermind of all of this, and I'm the one, you know, controlling my kids, and I've tried so hard to let them make their own decisions and not fault them or, you know, get upset with them for wanting to continue with my parents. But with enmeshment, it's so difficult. It's almost like you're not seen as an individual. So my kids are also feeling that.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And what about your husband? Is he no contact with your parents?
He wasn't for a little while. Through the end of 2022, my dad was still kind of texting him. They ran into each other in public, and my dad would break down in tears to my husband. I don't know what's going on. And my husband would say, Megan's told you, though. You might say you don't know, but Megan's told you what's going on. And so after they showed up to my house and were giving gifts and all that kind of stuff, my husband kind of set a pretty firm boundary. It was like, I don't like you guys doing this. I don't like the way you're treating Megan. At that point, they have stopped contacting him. So, I don't know if he would consider himself no contact. He's deeply hurt by them. But if they reached out, I don't know how he would really address it. He probably talked to me first, but
So they've backed off now. Do you hear from them at all, or are they still, you know?
Well, in September, actually, just a couple weeks before my birthday, my dad sent me a really long text message saying he was sorry if he'd ever hurt me, that he misses me, he loves me, and, you know, he doesn't really understand what's happening. He's still saying he didn't understand. But then it was apparent that he had come and watched a bunch of my TikTok videos. And so he was wanting to right a lot of the wrongs that he thought that I had portrayed. And so he didn't ask how I was. He didn't, you know, want to check in with me. So I took him seriously. At first, I was really actually hurt. And I kind of had a bad reaction to him. I was like, I don't understand how you can still say you don't know what's going on. He's also, my sister's going through divorce, and he has taken in her husband like a son to him. And that's deeply hurtful. And I wanted to ask him about that. In his text message, he said, families can work through hard things. And so I said, okay, here's one of the hard things. And he wrote me back, have a nice life. So I thought, okay. So I was really ruminating on this for 2 or 3 days. I was just so upset. And so I took some time and journaled as if I was speaking to him, just everything I wish I could say to him. When I got to the end, I read it back and I thought, what would it hurt if he read this? I wasn't angry. I was just kind of getting things out. So I sent him a letter. It was about 6 pages long. And I kind of went line by line through his text. Like, here's why this hurts me. And here's why I'm confused by this. And I don't think you meant this. And, you know, kind of went through. And about a week, 2 weeks after I sent that letter, I got a letter from a lawyer saying they were going to sue me for removal of my TikTok account, that they believed I was harassing and defaming them. And they had about 4 or 5 videos in particular that they were upset with. And so that's where things have been since like October of last year.
Wow. So did you have to remove those videos?
I did not. I actually went to a lawyer myself. I took the letter that I wrote my dad, had the lawyer read that, and the lawyer watched the videos, and he said, you haven't done anything wrong. I've never named my parents by name. I've only spoken about things that have happened to me. One of the videos in particular that they were upset about, I was talking about how they estranged me from several relatives when I was younger. And they would return birthday cards if I was sent something in the mail from like out of state relatives. And they would write nasty letters and send these birthday cards back. And they said that I was lying about that. They said that wasn't true. But I have a copy of the letter. I have a copy from a letter of a letter from 1988. So I took that with me to the lawyer and basically just found out I haven't done anything wrong. They don't really have a leg to stand on. But it was definitely really difficult to deal with that for a minute.
Wow. I'm so sorry you even had to deal with that and that they would even go to the, you know, those kinds of lengths to do that. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I know it makes me sad because I took my dad seriously in his text message. You said families can work through hard things. We have a lot of hard things to work through. Here's a list of them. Can we do it? Can we not? And I think I know the answer at this point.
Right. Yeah. Now, did you ever ask them to go to therapy or, I mean, you know?
Yeah. I've been asked that before. I never asked them to go when we were speaking. Mm-hmm. In my dad's letter, I did say, I think it would be beneficial for you to do therapy, especially if you get this letter and you feel angry. If you feel angry at me or you feel that I'm wrong, I think therapy would help you. Yeah. If you can't do therapy, here are some books that I read with my husband that helped us. And so I listed off a few books that I had read. And so that's all I've ever said to them about therapy. Yeah. I never really had that conversation in person with them.
Yeah. Do you know if they have their own trauma? Have they, you know, did they ever see their own childhoods?
I believe that they do, but it's hard, you know, to talk about those kinds of things. My mom married my dad when she was only 16. And hearing the stories, she wanted to get out of her house. You know, her home was very difficult to be in, but I don't know specifics about that. I know her father basically abandoned her and her siblings, her biological father, when she was around 12. He just up and left and like signed his rights away. And then she had a father who adopted her. Then she also has a stepfather. So she's got a lot of different abandonment things going on there that I don't know that she's ever addressed. And she was also no contact with her own mother for 5 years, right up until her mother died. They reconciled for just moments before her mother died. So there's a lot there. I was estranged from my grandmother basically my whole life. I was never allowed to know my grandmother. So I can't speak to who she was as a person.
Yeah. So definitely sounds like some intergenerational stuff going on there for sure. Yeah. And that again, it's like so common among families, but nobody's addressing any of that.
You know.
Which is sad, you know, it's sad.
It is.
Yeah. And then that all falls on you to unpack this all and work through it and address it. And then when you do, of course, that you're touching on their trauma and they can't deal with that. So they go into their survival and coping. Not that it's okay, but you know, that's essentially is what I see, you know, with everyone's family and it's unfortunate. And so you talked about, you know, that you did EMDR. You know, I always talk about when we do trauma therapy, it's very specific trauma therapy because trauma is stored in the body. And like you were saying that, you know, the digestive issues, has that cleared up?
I do still struggle. I was diagnosed with diverticulitis about 3 years ago, coming up on 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's still a struggle. If I let my anxiety get out of control, I'll have a big flare. So I have to do things, mindfulness work, and just really try to stay out of my head with things. So I had a big flare right after getting that letter from the lawyer.
I
struggled for a few months after that.
Yeah. And it's always so fascinating how you can see those, you know, that stress, right? It it can flare those things and really, did you read The Body Keeps the Score? Is that one of your
I
books?
haven't. That's on my list. I haven't read
Oh
that
yeah,
one.
That book will make all of that so much clearer, because that, you know, that book
Okay.
changed my life with the body stuff that I was like, oh my God, that's me. That's my life. And
Yeah, okay.
yeah, especially with like the autoimmune. I don't know if they consider what is it called?
Diverticulitis. I'm not
Yeah.
sure if it's autoimmune or not. It might be when it
Yeah.
presents from anxiety. I know there can be
Yeah.
physical problems, but I don't have the physical problems.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And so yeah, those autoimmune issues and why that is, and you know, what happens in the body and all those chemical reactions, and it's really, really good. But you had mentioned going back to trauma therapy, you know, the specific trauma therapies that deal with the body. And again, nothing wrong with talk therapy. There's a time and a place, but that those body-based therapies like somatic experiencing, like internal family systems, and like EMDR are really going to get to processing those experiences. And you had mentioned that EMDR did more for you than other therapies. Can you talk a
Yes,
little
I
bit
feel like
more
I
about what
processed.
you,
Oh, yeah, sorry.
talk about that processing experience and what really, you know, transformed for you?
Yeah, so part of the problem for me is when I was growing up, mental health issues weren't really talked about. So I had this hurdle of realizing that mental health was super important and there were things that you could do to feel better. So
Yeah.
I sometimes, even in talk therapy, would find myself people pleasing almost my therapist, like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to answer, or, you know, and it would be hard for me to kind of drop in and be really authentic. So EMDR, I feel like, helped me over that hurdle, but I still had that in the beginning. It felt very, I don't know how to explain it, just it's out there. That's how it felt to me, like, oh, this is sort of mythical or magical or something, like, I, you know, because you follow the fingers and all of that, and it just felt like, how
Yeah.
can this work? So it took me
Yeah.
a few tries to really say, just trust it, just go with it, just
Yeah.
see what happens. And once I did that, I don't know, it just felt like it unlocked something for me. It, for the EMDR, you have, you know, you like have a place for those things to go, you can visualize that, and that was so helpful for me. It was like when I had these nasty feelings come up, I knew why they were there and I had a place to put them. And it
Yeah.
just, I don't know, it was like it summed up my therapy so nicely. And ever since I did EMDR, I haven't been doing talk therapy as much.
Yeah, so powerful. Yeah, because you don't need the talk therapy when you develop, especially when you start to develop that relationship with your body. That talk therapy is just gonna seem like, you know, what is this? What am I doing here?
Yeah, because sometimes before therapy, I would feel myself getting very anxious. And then sometimes after, I would just be spent, sometimes for days, but I didn't feel like I did anything. Maybe I had a new level of understanding, but what do I do with it? Where does it go? So I felt like EMDR was kind of that stepping stone to help it go somewhere, get it out.
That's right. Exactly. That is so great. I love that. And so let's go back to boundaries, and because you had said something earlier when we were talking off screen. You know, and this again is something that people really, really struggle with, is setting boundaries, what boundaries to set, even knowing what your needs are, right? Like, what are my needs? Oh, I have needs because, again, I've been centering other people, and I don't have a relationship with myself or my body to even know what my needs are, let alone how to ask for what I need, right? Because that kind of comes from that communication where we're not like blowing up or stuffing or, you know, yelling at our kids or our partner, whatever it is that we're doing, right? Can you touch on those concepts a little more?
Yeah, so for me, I was really of this horrible mindset of people should just know what it is that I want. And I didn't know where that
I
started,
need
but it felt
yours.
like, yeah, why do I have to say what I need? How do you not just know? And so that was really difficult in therapy when I would go and I'd be really unhappy and they'd ask me why. And I'd say, oh, my husband this or my mom this. Well, did you say anything to them? No. What do you mean? I can't. What am I supposed to say? They should just know. It's like, they don't just know. And my mom, she uses a silent treatment a lot. And so as a kid, I sort of had to read her mind and know, did I do something? Did dad do something? Who did this? And I'm just going to be the best that I can be. I don't know how, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to be the best I could be. So I took that forward into my life. And so speaking about my needs feels so scary still. Sometimes it takes me a day or two sometimes to really be able to say something. First of all, I have to figure out what it is. Like, I can just be upset and not really know why. So now I sort of have these steps that I can take. I can sit down and I can journal and I can ask myself. I can sort of do talk therapy with myself and really figure out what it is. Because when I first started therapy, I had no idea who I was as a person. I had no idea what value I really had besides a wife, a mother, a daughter. I remember like starting a new job and being asked, well, introduce yourself, tell us some things about you. And all I could say was, I'm Megan. I'm a mom of two boys. I had no hobbies. I had nothing that I felt like I could share. And now if somebody asks me, I have so many different things because I've been working at it for a few years. So communication, I had the totally wrong idea for most of my life. In the last 2 years, really working on saying things out loud has been a journey. It's not always easy.
Yeah, it is. Wow. That's so that, cause that is just such an empowering feeling. And you know, when we're able to do that, it is so much freedom and liberation in that. Even when it's hard and you know, your parents are gonna flip out or do whatever it is they do, and allowing that person to have their reaction and knowing that you're not responsible for that.
That was very difficult for me for a while. I just felt so responsible for my mother, and to see her be hurt, even if I knew I wasn't responsible, it was so hard. Setting boundaries with her was very hard.
But it sounds like you've come to a place of, would you say, acceptance around that, or, you know,
just... I mean, I have accepted that I can't personally be the only one to fix our relationship, but I was stuck in that place for a little while. Like, I just wish they could get where I'm at. It's so nice over here. It's so nice speaking what it is that you need and working through problems. It's not easy, but it's amazing on the other side. So I've accepted that I can't do that for them. I can just try to keep going because, like I said, things have gotten better with my children and with my husband, and all the other relationships that I hold are flourishing. Right. So I know I'm not the problem, but it's very difficult.
That's so beautiful. You know, when we finally realize that we are not the problem and that we can have relationships that are so much deeper, right? And not these kind of superficial, I don't know, at least for me, the struggle in relationships was just always in my life. And I could never really understand why, you know, and I blamed it on the other person, you know? And so what have you learned about that in, you know, kind of those attachment wounds that come up in our relationships, right? And how has that blossomed for you or repaired for you in those relationships with your, you know, with your husband, your children? What does that look like?
It's been really nice. Like I said, it's been difficult because my kids were also older when I started to make these changes. They weren't toddlers. They were older teenagers. So they've also been conditioned in really unhealthy ways for most of their life. So trying to change my communication style, my parenting style to teenagers is hard because they want me to react the way I used to react, or, you know, they're trying to get those same reactions from me as before. So it's taken my husband and I both really working together on our parenting, coming to each other with struggles that we might be having with the kids and not taking it out on the kids. And so it's led to such deeper relationships because, like you were saying, most of my relationships were very superficial. I could hold things in balance as long as I didn't talk about anything that was too difficult or, you know, too traumatic or too deep. And now it's like, I can talk, anybody in my life is going through a healing journey. So we can talk about these things. We can say, today's kind of a struggle. Yeah. Today I'm feeling really down, or I'm being very sensitive. I'm struggling. Like, I can't have that conversation now, or let's wait. Right. To have those type of talks with people, it's so amazing. Every time I see myself react differently than the past, I like have a little celebration. You're like, oh my God, I changed. I'm not doing that anymore. That's so nice. But it takes some time.
Yeah.
You have to be really gentle with yourself throughout that, for sure.
Yeah. That definitely, you know, those being reactive. I don't know about you, but I was very reactive, you know, just react.
Mm-hmm.
I was always that way since I was like, I started in probably, you know, high school or teenage years, mm-hmm. right? Being just really reactive. And to have that shift and pause and you know, connect and yeah, a lot of capacity building to be able to do that.
Yes. It takes work for sure. Cause I wasn't so much reactive as internalizer. I would just shut down. If something got too hard, I would just shut down. I might be reactive to my children a little bit. Like, I was so guilty of saying things to them. Like, if I had a hard day at work, like, I can't do this right now. How dare you? Like, I had a really hard day at work.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh my gosh, how could you say that? It's hard to like think back on some of the things that you've done as a parent.
Ooh,
that's a whole other lens that therapy opened up for me. It's like, this isn't just my parents. You too. You're at fault too. So it's tough, like thinking about that. But yeah, building up that capacity, you feel so strong when you finally get there. You're like, oh my gosh, look at me go.
Yes, it's seriously. it is the hardest thing to wake up to your own trauma and then realize that you also hurt, you know, your kids and that. I don't know. Yeah, that was like literally the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And like you said, the most transformational, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was very, very difficult because when I started therapy, I started for a specific reason. I'm the problem. Mm-hmm. I can change myself. Then to kind of realize it's not just you. You are the problem in some ways, but to think back on the ways I've treated my children through realizing how I was treated. Oh my goodness, that is tough work. And that's why I also can hold such firm boundaries with my parents. I can do it. I've done it. I've been doing it. It's hard to say sorry to my kids. It's hard to let them hold me accountable. But I can do it. So can you. It's not easy. Right. Nobody said it was.
Yeah.
If you could do it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you know, and the sad part of that is how much they miss out on by holding to their survival responses and being so unwilling to even acknowledge anything is wrong.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Because that's the human experience. We've all hurt someone and we've all been hurt. It's universal. We should be able to talk about it.
Yes.
You can't go through life saying, I'm perfect. Everything's perfect. There's never been a problem.
Right. Everything's fine. Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. So I think we're going to wrap things up. Is there anything else that I left out that you feel like is important to share?
Goodness, I don't know. I think we had a great conversation today. We touched on so many things. I think it's so important to keep talking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, you know, when I first saw your content, I was like, oh, you've done some work because it really shows through.
I'm glad.
Yeah. So it really, your hard work really comes through. So I just want to acknowledge that.
Thank you. That makes me feel relieved because I get a lot of comments of people saying you need therapy. And I'm like, you must not be watching because I've had therapy for a while.
Yeah, I'm new on TikTok, as you know. And I don't know if I'm going to stick around. It's rough out there.
Some days are tough.
Yeah, it's an interesting platform for sure. But on the flip side of that is finding the right kind of people that are really, you know, have done the work and that you know would be able to help others in this space.
Yes.
Yeah, I have no doubt that you could do that. And I'm always really careful of who I have on my podcast because of that, you know, being really deeply trauma informed, you know, kind of means that you have done the work on yourself. So
yeah,
that's apparent. Yeah. So I really, really appreciate that.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so this has been a great conversation, and I hope to stay in contact and see if
Yes.
we can have some other conversations,
That would be amazing.
get this out for people and get their feedback and see what else we might be able to do.
Yes, I love that because I think it takes everybody of different generations talking, because I know I'm younger, so some people just automatically just kind of write me off. So I think I appreciate like all the different levels of people that are talking about this. It's great that we
Yeah.
can all connect.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much again for being
Thank you.
on today.
Thank you. It was so fun. So nice to meet you.
You too.